Greetings and welcome to Flanagan's Ecologic. I am your host, Ted Flanagan, and today we're going to be talking oysters, our second podcast on oysters, this time with Talmadge Petty. He is the founder and the president of the Hollywood Oyster Company. He's a good friend of mine, and I'm really excited to have him on the podcast today. Hey, Talmadge. Welcome to the podcast. Good to see you, man.
Hey, Ted. Great to be here.
Yeah, yeah. And where are you sitting right now? Are you in Maryland as we speak?
I am in Hollywood, Maryland, right on the western shore of the Chesapeake Bay.
Perfect. And your day, how is your day starting off? Do you have morning routines that you have to get into? I've already introduced you as the founder and the president of Hollywood Oyster, so everybody knows you're an oyster farmer.
Yeah, the question's the morning routine. Yeah, I get up around 6 every day and I say hello to the world and step outside and just breathe the air and think about the weather and stuff like that. And then I meditate and then I do some yoga and then the family wakes up and I'm fast at it. We're a house with 2 small businesses.
Well, now I figured that you were down on the water, you know, early in the morning. Is that not the drill?
Yeah, I have an awesome team, and I go to the farm 3 days a week, and mostly just have meetings. Mostly, I sell and manage money and stuff like that these days.
Cool. And so I introduce you as an oyster farmer. Is that what you would call yourself?
Oh, for sure. And if I'm in a mood, I call myself an oyster whisperer. But it's a stewardship thing. It's you know, that, so even though I know a thing or two about growing oysters and have done that for many, many years. And we're just at a size now where I do the management stuff. But right. To me, oyster whisperer and farmer, you know, in an urban environment, you know, people think, oh, you're a farmer, you know, it's like, you know, I'm doing IT or I'm doing finance or whatever. And to me, it's a very proud thing to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I've heard that you have a truck and you're running not just your own oysters, but other farmers' oysters up into New England. Is that right?
Well, we sell nationally. And the way we do that is we are 90 minutes. We're lucky to be only 90 minutes from a major distribution point. So it's, you know, once you grow an oyster, then you have to sell an oyster. And there's a lot of people that sort of have figured out how to grow an oyster. But there's a whole other world out there of just getting it to the customer reliably and consistently. We sell to, let's say, Vegas, and I just tell the team, you know, the chef in Vegas doesn't give a flying F what the weather is in Maryland, you know, and we got to get them there no matter the weather or what. So we send a truck up to the distribution point and airport 4 days a week.
And where is that airport? That's not Washington Dulles.
For us, it's Baltimore. So we go up, there's a trucking depot and it's called Jessup, Maryland. Yeah. And it's right off of 95 on the run from Maine down to Florida.
Right. And so now your oysters are going, you said nationally, how many states are they going out to?
I haven't counted states, but probably 20 or so. Probably more than that, because some distributors hit just 10 or 12 on their own.
Right. And then you are taking oysters from other folks as well?
Actually, I'm not doing that. What I am doing, I have mentored some farms. Mm-hmm. And so what I do is I'll work with other, we have a pretty big farm, but sometimes I'll supplement with other farms that we've mentored and meet our quality control standards.
Right. So what is a big farm in terms of number of oysters?
We sell a couple of million oysters a year. And so for me, that's actually not very big. But yeah. Someone just recently told me that there's really less than 50 farms that are that big in the country. And that was actually eye-opening to me. And I just learned that.
Really? Really? Huh. Well, so let's back up. I know this story, but I'm sure our listeners are going to be curious. How did this all come about? You grew up in Washington, D.C., our parents knew each other. We've known each other since we were, I guess, probably in diapers, actually. And you went off to University of Vermont, and we connected there. But then you went off into commercial real estate. And how did this all come about that you pivoted to become an oyster farmer?
I think you gave the best summary that we should give in the time here. And I think the answer is that my folks, when we actually, I was actually born in New York City, and up and we moved to DC when I was about 8 or 10. And between, and when we were in New York, we had a country place. We were pretty lucky. And literally every Friday night, we were yanked out of the city and went to a place with a pond. And then we, you know, parachuted back into New York on Sunday night. And you know, my sob story is that I never went to the birthday parties. But the wonderful part is, you know, I grew up as a New York City kid, you know, catching crayfish and fish. And then when we moved to D.C., we got a 300-acre farm an hour and a half south of the city. And when I was a teenager and was a little rebellious, I would literally just take the bus downtown and jump on a Greyhound bus and go to the farm, and was kind of a feral child on the farm.
Well, okay, so that's some of the early days, but you did go off into, I mean, when you were in Boston, you did go off into commercial real estate. You had a number of ventures that you were working on, but something changed in your life that you wanted to go back to the farm and use that asset, I guess, for an oyster farm.
Yeah, so we had the farm, and so yeah, I had an MBA in there and a wonderful family, 4 kids. And yeah, I never really was super happy and changed careers every 7 or so years. Somewhere in there, in Maryland, we have a program for oyster gardening, where you get a tax credit to buy the equipment and oyster seed every year. So before I went commercial, I actually spent about 10 years oyster gardening, and then I did it for, you know, I told my friends, and then they all went and called their accountants, and then they found that they could do it too. And we had the oyster grower watcher club. And so you would come down, if they came down, the job was to, you had to bring a bottle of some libation, and we would watch the oysters grow.
Yeah, that's, so the tax credits gave you the initial capital, I guess, or at least took care of the initial.
What that did was that kept me from drinking too many gin and tonics on the weekend, and I would just jump in the water and tend the oysters. Yeah. And then we would grow, you know, 10,000, 15,000 oysters, and I can't eat that many. And so I'd have a big party every year. And somewhere in there, some chef friends came down and said, "Tell, you know, these are really good oysters." And that was right around the time when the laws in Maryland changed. That was 2010. And the laws changed to basically promote aquaculture in the state. And so I was one of the first farms in that early crop of licenses.
Right. And what would be a good oyster? I'm sure it's the taste, right? Is it also the size?
Yeah, it's the whole miroir terroir thing. So we have the miroir, and so the, you know, the pitch on our oysters is we have, first of all, you have to grow a quality oyster, and there's a whole discussion there about the shuckability and the shell structure and the shape of it and the look of it. But it's really about the taste. And we have this creek, which is fossil lined, and with a shell, with a clay substrate. And so, and we're in the upper Chesapeake Bay, there's not a lot of salt. And so if you're up in New York or in New England and part of Chicago and parts of the world, you know, people think that you got to have a salty oyster, and we've got a sweet oyster. And the reason, you take the salt away, and a lot of oysters in our area, there's not a lot of flavor. There's no real there. And so we're really lucky. We have a golden area where there's a mineral finish and a floral taste, and the chefs love it. The customers love it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So when you started out growing, I guess in the old days, a lot of the oysters beds were wiped out because people were dredging. I guess oystermen were dredging and clearing out oyster beds, but you started by growing oysters in cages, right?
Yeah, so the discussion there is there's aquaculture, and then there's wild harvest. It's sort of the cowboys and the ranchers type thing. And I'm really into the sustainability side of life, which is, oysters are on the top of the charts of as far as sustainability. And the question is with wild oysters is you're depleting oyster beds, and are they coming back? And in the bay here, we had some diseases a decade or two ago that were wiping out the wild oysters. But to this day, the aquaculture in the bay compared to the volume of harvest compared to the wild harvest is still, it's less than 25%. There is a large demand for oysters out there. There's basically in Maryland, we actually, in the public waters, they actually reseed those. So it's basically public aquaculture in areas where they dredge them. And then there's the Chesapeake Bay Foundation. They close off a lot of big creeks so that they are naturally being restored. And there's a whole discussion around that. But to me, there's a whole vibrant discussion and of evolution of the community. Where aquaculture is growing and the habitat of the bay is increasing.
So you're doing aquaculture, right? With oysters in cages.
I do, but just to say it, I buy a lot of wild oysters in the winter because I'm in a waterman's community and I have customers that want them.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Now let's talk about, I had George Lindsay on, who is involved with, creating this or involved with the foundation up in Oyster Bay, where they're very involved with education of kids and the benefits of oysters. And it sounds like an oyster can filter just a huge amount of water every day, 30 or 40 gallons of water a day. And it's that filtration that is one of the real ecological benefits of oysters. Is that right?
That's what our media says. And so of course it is. And it's even 50 gallons a day. But for me, it's the proverbial drop in the bucket. I mean, it's a really good thing. Every gallon matters. But our river is the deepest river in the East Coast. And where we are, it's a mile wide and 72 feet deep halfway out. The man overboard drill in the creek where we are is stand up, but the point is it's a big river with a large volume of water. To me, what I really love about oyster farming is that we have thousands of cages, and the habitat, even though we rotate those cages every month, 2 months, whatever, depending on the size, we put a cage in the water with tumbled oysters all cleaned up and pretty clean cage, and then we pull them out, it's just teeming with life. There's crabs, there's eels, there's fish, there's seaweed, and then you have all the bigger fish, and then you look at the ripples of the water, and then the bigger fish are eating the little fish, and the birds are eating the big fish, and there's just this whole area where before we were there, our bottom is a hard sandy bottom. It's basically a desert with water on top. And so we have populated our entire farm with cages, and it sounds like, wow, that's a lot of wire and whatever. No, it's habitat. It's like the whole, why do fishermen go to the wrecks on the bottom? I don't think we're going to equate us to a wreck, but the point is they congregate, and it's a habitat creation.
Interesting. And how old are the oysters when you harvest them? Are they two or three years old?
On average, it takes us 2 years to grow a 3-inch oyster.
A 3-inch, and that's the size you're shooting for?
Yeah, I literally just got off the phone with our farm. We're having a really good season, and they all like popped. So my problem this month is that all my 2.5-inch oysters, which are supposed to be beautifully 3 inches for the fall harvest and before it gets cold again and through the winter, a whole bunch of them are 3.5 inches, and I'm like, oh, okay, well now I'm selling some 3.5-inch oysters.
Huh. Now, do you harvest in the winter also? It sounds like maybe not.
We harvest 52 weeks a year, 4 days a week. It's called feeding the beast. And that's one of those things about being an oyster farmer. It's not like corn or any field crop, which you grow it, you harvest it, and then you wait, you let it grow. We harvest every week. And the customers we have don't understand the word no. What do you mean you don't have oysters? If you literally, I won't go into the sales side, but that's just what we do, and we normalize our operations to meet that.
Yeah, yeah. And then were oysters in the old days, and I'm talking 40, 50 years ago, were they much bigger? Are oysters smaller now? This is a good question.
I just got back from the West Coast on a sales event, and I had a whole bunch of people asking me for smaller oysters. They thought that my 3-inch oysters were a little big.
So oh, really?
it's a consumer thing. Mostly the really big oysters get shucked. And they're sort of more than a mouthful. And I think that generally the oyster eating population, it varies. Like if you're down on the Gulf, they want a 3 or 3.5-inch oyster. But a lot of the urban customers like a 2.5 to 3-inch oyster. They want to taste it and roll it around in their tongue, but not necessarily have to chew it and gulp it.
And do you eat oysters every day, Talmadge?
Sweet Jesus, yes.
Your stomach must be full of oysters all the time. Vitamin.
They put lead, va-va-voom. It's good for you.
Just curious about whether you're trying to grow the operation larger or whether it's just at a good size to sort of sustain your operation and in your interest.
We're going to grow it a little bigger, but it really is a volume game. It's because of the vagaries of the market. As a seller, I find it difficult to sort of have oysters for part of the year and then not have them for part of the year. And I have a lot of overhead. I have a packing house. I have lots of boats and equipment, and to carry that overhead, you need to carry a certain volume. After 12 years, I'm really just starting to get some decent cash flow.
And so you say you have literally thousands of cages out there in the water?
Yes.
And you've got them all sort of mapped out so you know what, I guess they're all time stamped or something like that?
Oh yeah, inventory management's key. If you like, that would be a total, can I say, shit show on the air. Yes, inventory management's key. We know exactly, we mostly by rows of about 50 cages. But basically, right. we know what's in every cage and when it went in and when it went out and what size. And there's a whole discussion what size oyster and things like that are in the cage.
And are they all growing at pretty much the same rate so that one cage, you're not having to sort through all the oysters in a cage for size?
Oyster farming, here we go. So yeah, they actually grow at different sizes. And so one of the reasons we pull them out, we tumble them, we chip the growing edge, it develops a nice deep cup, it gives it, hardens up the shell. To make a good product, but it also sorts them by size. So we put them back in to grow again, relatively uniform size. So that actually normalizes our harvest size. So this time of year, we pull a cage through the winter of harvest sized oysters. Basically 80, 90% of them are ready to market. And the others we just throw back and let them grow some more.
So how many times are you pulling up the cage in the life of the oyster?
If you start at about an inch, it's really only two. Yeah, every time you touch a cage, you're losing money, right? It's costing you time. Where it's really only three, maybe four times. But up to an inch, oh my gosh. I mean, we start them at basically 1 or 2 millimeters. It's a little bigger than the grain of sand. And those babies are touched once a week, and then once every 2 weeks, and once every month up until there is until that. We have a whole seed team. We have a whole nursery, a whole elementary school team, and we have a high school team. We have three production teams on the dock.
Really, and this touching them, you said you're trying to harden the shell, you shape the shell. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's all part of having a large, plump, firm, desirable oyster meat.
Is shaping the shell?
Yeah.
And so you take them out and you put them in some sort of a tumbler, and that sort of chips off the any spikes and things that might be.
They grow from one end. It's kind of like a fingernail, but it's a shell, and chipping that growing edge thickens up the shell and has them cup out. And it also does, but here in the Chesapeake, especially where there's more salt, growers take shortcuts, and they have a chalky shell, and they're not as desirable by the chefs. And so that's actually that's deep oyster farming stuff, but not every oyster is the same.
Yeah. Boy, it's so interesting, Talmadge. I had no idea that happened. I just imagined that they were just sitting out there and that was that, but that you're actually handling them to that degree is amazing to me. So how many, like you said, you've got a good team. How many people do you have now working on the farm?
We've got 15 people on the payroll.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it takes, huh?
Yeah. I don't want to get much bigger than that, but the team is everything. And that's what I guess you asked what I was doing earlier is I've learned a thing or two in the last 10 or 12 years growing a farm is growing a team. And I've realized that that's where really I spend more and more of my time is just managing the culture and working with everybody to make all the pieces hum.
Yeah. And what kind of person is a good oysterman, have you found?
Oh my God. Just, you know, an oyster farmer, we're all characters. I think that's the best way to put it.
I think for, yeah, the people that are out on, like you said, they're out on the water 52 weeks a year, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and they love it. I mean, that's what the first question I ask is, like, this is an outdoor job. You like getting wet, you know? You like being outside?
Yeah, yeah. Huh. So how do then, let's just talk a little bit more about the marketing of your product. We've talked a little bit about growing your product, but then you've obviously got these great channels. You're sending oysters all over the country. How does that come about? Do you go to trade shows or do you advertise, or how does that work?
Yeah. I mean, you asked I was in, before I was a real estate developer, I was a real estate broker, so right out of college. And so, you know, you pick up, I know how to pick up the phone and take no for an answer and make a sale and just get through to the right person and make the pitch. And so I'm lucky to have that skill.
Yeah.
But yeah, we go to shows and events and promote the product. And we have really good branding. I mean, we're lucky to have good names and logos and branding to reflect that basically my whole thing is someone goes in a restaurant and they look at a menu of oysters. You want to put a smile on their face and you want them to choose your oyster.
So what makes them smile? I mean, Hollywood oyster to begin with.
Yeah. Right? We have a sweet Jesus oyster.
Oh, sweet Jesus. Okay.
A sweet Jesus. That's a good oyster. And we have a va-va-voom oyster because it's true what they say about oysters. Va-va-voom.
Uh-huh. So now let's just use Vegas as an example. Your oysters are shipped to Vegas. They must be shipped to what, a food distributor in Vegas?
Yeah. So I work with food regional quality. They're either seafood distributors or protein. So I'm sold along with chicken, beef, and turkey and whatever else.
And so it's finding those distributors in each one of these cities or each one of these markets. That's the key.
Yeah. I mean, it's business to business sales and it's all relationships.
Right. And are they, I presume they're hammering you on the price and you're saying, no, I can't take that. It's got to be this. And it's got to be a lot of negotiation.
Yeah. It's business sales you get in the, it's like anything in business, you get in the door and then you got to deliver. And we have a reputation for consistency and reliability, and that's what I work on here at the farm.
Yeah, yeah, and the really good taste. So interesting what you said about the conditions that create that taste, whether it's salty or minerals in the water, all that good stuff. Where of course you think that the Chesapeake Bay has the best oysters in the world, but where would you say are the second? Where are some of the second best oysters, where do they come from?
Oh, that's good. I'm just going to be up to go there. But I just, to me, variety is the spice of life. And so if I go to an oyster bar and you buy a dozen, I just hope you choose three or four of ours. But really, that's the fun part, is to
try them all.
Choose the different types and to savor the different ones and see what your experience makes you happy.
Yeah. Were there family members and friends and others that sort of saw you going off into into the oyster world and thought, oh, there goes Talmadge. You ain't coming back. And thought you were kind of crazy, or what was the reaction from your loved ones?
Well, I had left my wife. I did a couple of other things at the same point in time. And that was a point in time in my life where I had, I finally woke up and realized that I'd been living my life to meet other people's expectations. And that's a whole discussion, but I'm living my life, and it's the best decision and thing I ever did.
Does the farming, how does that affect your life? I just imagine it's a very stabilizing kind of effect, right? It's just an ongoing, every day you have to be out there working the farm.
Yeah. And I would say that the whole connection with nature and the world is really a part of the satisfaction of it. I mean, we're a small business. My wife has a small business, and I have a lot of children and family. And so that's a big component of my life. But the farming connection is very real and is very grounding and helps you see a lot of things deeply.
Yeah, I would think. And I know you've got a very young, beautiful child that's keeping you nice and active. What else are you doing to relax and have fun?
I think our big excitement in the day is chicken TV.
What does that mean, chicken TV?
We go to the farm and we pull out a couple of folding chairs and we pull out the scraps from the garden. We love gardening too. And we feed them to the chickens and we just sit and watch chicken TV. There's a very active social life on those chickens.
You're leading the good life. It's great. It's just great. Is there anything I'm forgetting to ask you, Talmadge, that you would want to lay out here?
I thought that was a great set of questions, Ted. You're awesome. Okay.
Oh, well, it's fun. It's easy to ask questions when you're interested in a topic. And I'll just end by saying I'm just terribly impressed by what you've accomplished, and not just from a business standpoint, but that you made a huge pivot in your life. I watched from a distance, but you made a huge pivot in your life to find a new path. And this is a really good tasting path that you chose.
Thanks, Tal.
Thanks for being on the podcast.
That's it. Thanks for listening to Flanagan's EcoLogic. We'll see you next time.